Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Do you have any idea how much your local teacher's contract is costing you as a taxpayer? Or how some of the fine details of the latest state police or state public works contract add up to more dollars out of your own paycheck, no matter where you live? We're going to open today with the Yankee Institute, which just launched a new comprehensive database of every public labor contract in the state and how it can help you and your elected leaders better understand how they impact our communities and economy. Then we're going to have an energized conversation with the new CEO of one of the state's oldest human services agencies, the Children's Center of Hamden. We're going to learn how this new vibrant agency leader is thinking outside the box while helping established staff, students, and clients stay safe while benefiting from all the center's services. And we're going to close with another critical subject involving our kids and the state's workforce as we welcome a representative from Connecticut's Office of Early Childhood talking about a brand new partnership with the Women's Business Development Council, laser focused on protecting, enhancing, and sustaining our fragile network of child care centers. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. In the wake of COVID-19, the 43rd annual Faxon Law New Haven Road Race has become a virtual event. Participants can register for the virtual half marathon, 20K, 5K, or kids fun run, and participate at the time and place of their choosing during Labor Day weekend. Each year, the event benefits New Haven nonprofits, and participants are going to be missed and their custom road race to the virtual event. Results will be self-reported and compiled into race results and a database for you to see after. To register for the virtual race, all you need to do is visit www.newhavenroadrace.org. Well, we're kicking it off today here with the Yankee Institute and Frank Ritchie, who is a Yankee Institute senior strategist. We learned just a few days ago that the success of Yankee Institute's Connecticut Sunlight Project highlights how much Connecticut's people want to understand the inner workings of a government that claims to act on their behalf. And they are acting on that commitment by unveiling a unique new database, which is designed to offer information on a topic that governs a substantial portion of state policy, but has up to now really been shrouded in secrecy. And that is collective bargaining agreements in Connecticut. It's interesting that last week we kind of led the show talking about a little deeper dive into understanding some of the challenges and issues related to Connecticut's public pension programs. And it's fantastic that Frank has been able to reach out and connect with us through the Yankee Institute to talk about this other kind of unknown area that reaches into our pockets, no matter who we are, as a taxpayer here in the state of Connecticut. So, Frank, thanks for joining us on the program.
John, it's an honor to be on your show, and on behalf of Yankee Institute, we're proud to be here.
So, tell us quickly a little bit more broadly about how the Yankee Institute is working, kind of as its own little freedom of information engine, to try to help enlighten taxpayers and residents of the state of Connecticut and anyone about government's inner workings.
Yankee Institute is an advocate for sound public policy. And, you know, under the leadership of Carol Libo, they've been a champion of transparency and the proper role of government. In 2010, Yankee launched the Sunlight Project. And what was great about that is it gave elected leaders, concerned citizens, the media at their fingertips what salaries, pensions, what the state checkbook was like, what was the state of Connecticut spending their tax dollars on? And Yankee knows that transparent government is accountable government. And because of that Sunlight Project, John, the state of Connecticut passed the Public Act for a searchable database for state expenditures. So this information is available on Yankee's website, but it's also available on transparency.ct.gov. Yankee's basically become a trusted news source for transparency in Connecticut.
Well, one of the things as a longtime journalist that really piqued my interest when I received news of this new project was reading that the new database that provides insight and the fine details of bargaining agreements is that maybe for the first time, without a lot of either feeling like they're putting themselves at risk or sticking their necks out, so to speak, union members, rank and file, can actually access the fine details of the contracts that apply to them, where before that might not have been so easy to do.
Yes, John. This database helps management, the concerned citizen, individual union members, and elected officials. And I think you said it best. These rules in these collective bargaining agreements that are between labor and management governs a substantial portion of how your tax dollars are spent. So it comes back down to the tax dollars in your pocket, what your family can spend and what you spend for government.
So tell us the breakdown, if you would, in the next 5 or 6 minutes that we have with you, how each of these audiences can come to this same database and get different types of information most applied to them.
Okay, well, let's just start with elected leaders. You know, we want our elected leaders to be able to ask the right questions and the hard questions. We find in collective bargaining, often elected leaders that are asked to vote on these agreements, some of them don't even read them. They're hard to find. They're often voting on a summary. Mm-hmm. So these contracts, they contain the largest cost drivers, pension, health care, that affects the community, and that affects your tax dollars directly.
Mm-hmm. How about plain old Joe Citizen who doesn't work in a collective bargaining unit, but actually feels the pain every time they have to file their taxes?
Well, Yankee Institute believes that engaged citizens is what really drives reform, and Connecticut is worth saving, and we need positive reforms. But having engaged citizens understand the collective bargaining agreements, understand the rules, it allows them to hold their elected leaders and town bureaucrats responsible. This database does something great for management, too. Right now, the unions have all the information, but what we found is that management doesn't have this type of information at their fingertips, even when they hire outside counsel or use an internal lawyer. This database will bring balance back to the bargaining table, because in collective bargaining agreements, when you're negotiating in Connecticut, a lot of it comes down to comparable cities and similar language for similar situated bargaining units. So this will allow managers and town attorneys to do research that they don't have the time or resources to do at this time.
So can you tell me a little bit about the nuts and bolts of how this is set up? Is it, kind of like a spreadsheet where you have to find the areas that are most interesting, or is it searchable?
This is the great thing about Yankee Institute. They put a lot of time. This was an arduous task that Megan and the team worked tirelessly on to make it easy for everybody involved. So if you just simply go to yankeeinstitute.org, right there on the top in the blue banner, you can click on the database. You can also find it in projects, which is another button. But once you're on the database, this is simple. You just have to put in the location, which is the town. Are we talking about state or town? And then once you find the town and it's a drop-down box, so you don't even have to type anything in. You can scroll down to the community you live in that you're most affected by. And then you just go to the job title, which would be if you're looking at teacher contracts, police, fire. Again, these are all drop-down menus, so there's no typing. You'll be able to find your community's contract within seconds. They did an unbelievable job with this.
And you're also looking for unit leaders, bargaining unit leaders, to send you their latest negotiated and completed contracts, right?
John, you're 100% right. You know, I explained how much time it took the Yankee Institute to put this together. So not just bargaining unit members, but also town managers, labor attorneys. If a new contract is renewed after July 1st, 2020, we would love you to email that to Megan@YankeeInstitute.org. You know, we really appreciate transparency, and I think that the taxpayers appreciate transparency as well.
And in the last minute or so I have with you, Frank, how has the participation been, either in terms of you guys going out and trolling for and getting these contracts or them being voluntarily provided? Have you got contracts that actually represent units in all of Connecticut's 169 towns and cities?
Yes. At this point right now, John, there's over 837 contracts covering every town in Connecticut, and we're going to keep working and building this website. So I think that this is going to be the clearinghouse for all collective bargaining agreements in the state. And we encourage every town should have their collective bargaining agreements up on their website. Some of them don't. And it's really, you know, if it's not transparent, then it's absent from, and you can't apply public scrutiny to it. We need to be able to hold our elected officials accountable. And the only way to do that is to have a transparent government that's working for us.
And if citizens and union members can't find it there, they can find it at YankeeInstitute.org/contracts. This is the new database, the first of its kind in Connecticut, and it houses every state, municipal, and regional collective bargaining agreement in Connecticut, ensuring both that union members can access their own contracts and that everyone, especially taxpayers that are impacted by these contracts, can access these rules that govern their schools, police and fire departments, towns, and the state. Our guest, Frank Ritchie, is a senior strategist with the Yankee Institute. To kick off the program this morning, Frank, great to meet you, and we'll look forward to talking with you again soon. Thank you and the Yankee Institute for this important work. Well, our guest this morning is very new to an agency that's been a great friend of ours here at the award-winning For the People for some time. They've occasionally had representatives here on the program because Hamden is so near and dear to our hearts. It's where I started on the first radio station here in our group that we worked on almost three decades ago. And I'm talking about the Children's Center of Hamden. This is a behavioral health organization that's dedicated to helping individuals of all cultural backgrounds achieve their highest level of functioning through quality treatment, education, and care. And really one of the most amazing things about it is this agency is going on 187 years old from its humble beginnings. It has sustained and supported now, I have to imagine, tens if not hundreds of thousands of people over almost two centuries. And the latest and greatest addition to their team is Selma Ward. She's on the line with me right now, and she is the new CEO of the Children's Center of Hamden. So, Selma, I understand you're bringing two passions to life in this new role, dealing with young people and healthcare. So that leads me to want to know a little bit more about your background. Let's talk about that, and welcome to the program.
John, good morning. Thank you so much for having me on your program, and thank you for setting up this platform to talk about the Children's Center of Hamden and my two passions in life. So a little bit about me. Well, first and foremost, I'm a mom, right? So as a mom, young people, I have one daughter. She's a senior in college. Oh, my goodness, a senior in college. That's still a little hard.
You had a hard enough time dealing with senior in high school. I know, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But I am a super proud mom, and she is an only child, and she frequently had girlfriends over. friends all the time. And, you know, it got me really involved in what young people are doing and thinking and feeling. And of course, I'm Miss Selma, and they still come to me to this day with questions. How should I handle this? So I've always been involved in youth and youth development in some type of way. 5 years ago, I was introduced through a job opportunity to behavioral health care and found another passion. You know, health care in all of the various spectrums, whether we're talking primary care, behavioral health care, dental health care, there's great disparity in this country as it relates to health care. And I wanted to work in an environment where I could help close some of those gaps and provide the best service to help people live their best lives.
Excellent. So tell me about the lead up to coming on with the Children's Center of Hamden. Is this an organization that was familiar to you? Are you a Greater New Haven resident who has known about this agency?
I am actually not a resident of Greater New Haven. I knew a little bit about the Children's Center of Hamden, and I actually heard about this opportunity through the firm that recruited for the Children's Center of Hamden, the succeeding CEO. And, oh, by the way, I'm a resident of New London County. I live in the northern part of New London County.
Very good.
So I received a phone call. It was kind of like the pre-interview for this position. And those bells and whistles and dings and everything that tells you this is a moment, this is a change, this is exciting, this is something you need to go for. I was getting all of those signals. And after that phone call, I went home and I wrote a vision statement of what my leadership would look like. Presumptuous? Yes. But I happen to be an optimistic person. My vision statement, it took me about an hour or so to craft, is to provide the foundation that will help them in their future success. And I carried that vision statement with me to this day. I approach every day as the CEO of the Children's Center of Hamden with that vision in mind. All of the work that we do, the administrative work, the direct care workers, the clinical team, the medical team, the dietary team, the education team, everybody is putting together that foundation so that the individuals and the children and their families that we serve can obtain future success. So that's where I'm coming from, and that's how I approach my role. Every day.
Wow. Well, as you said in your advance, that the Children's Center of Hamden's been there 186 years, and you're not going to let the COVID-19 pandemic put the kibosh on that, which is fantastic. Beyond the brief introduction that I made, though, and for people who may not be familiar with it, although the model of the Children's Center may be likened to an agency or service in their neck of the woods here in Connecticut or out on Long Island or in New York. Tell us a little bit more about the center and how it's set up and the team that you have there.
Well, we have a number of programs in the human service field here at the Children's Center. We have a residential treatment program that services youth with maybe a higher acuity of chronic mental health disorders. They will stay with us for a short period of time that will help them learn tools and techniques to be able to re-enter into the community and their home life. We have a respite. Sometimes youth just need a week away, 24 hours away, to be able to regroup, deal with certain changes in their lives, and we provide that service. We have an educational facility here, the Whitney Hall School, and that is a special education school for students that may need more specialized help in their educational walk. So those really describe the type of services. And let me not forget Casa Rios as well, which is an adult developmentally disabled program, so that people with developmental disabilities have a home in the community, and they have support and case management within the community. So we really focus our efforts on our truly most vulnerable of the society and provide wraparound services to make sure that they can be successful.
Well, that's great. If folks are interested in learning more about the agency, they can simply go online to childrenscenterhamden.org and get a deeper insight into the people and students and institution there that has been serving this region, and not exclusively Hamden, right, Selma? It's you draw.
Correct. We could have young people come from all over the state.
Fantastic.
Well, attend our schools, attend in our residential treatment programs.
Very good. And so while COVID-19 has had some effect over there, things are still running. Tell us a little bit about the challenges that you have faced, both in terms of pivoting to some virtual programming for those who are suited to it, and more so, I guess, the challenges on campus with the younger people, because, I mean, this seems to really be all we're hearing about these days in the news.
Isn't it? COVID has just, this pandemic has truly touched so many people in a number of different ways. So for our outpatient and community-based programs, you know, we do outpatient mental health and substance use disorder treatment, and we had to turn to telehealth. I give kudos to the legislative body for continuing to cover telehealth as a service until, I think it's March of 2021. Right now, that is something that we in the behavioral health field and provision of telehealth services really needed, because people are not necessarily comfortable coming back in and doing face-to-face services. So telehealth is a really wonderful option. But what did we have to do here at the Children's Center? Well, we had to get laptops for our clinicians. We had to identify and find a HIPAA-compliant platform for them to be able to provide telehealth services. And for some of our clinical team, we had to make sure that they had the appropriate bandwidth and internet connections to be able to provide those services seamlessly. So there were expenses that we had to incur in order to meet the needs. And did, of the community.
And did all of this hit you like welcome to the neighborhood, congratulations on your new job, Selma here? You know, was this somewhat ramping up upon your arrival?
These were ramping up upon my arrival. I was incredibly fortunate once the board made the decision to select me as the new CEO. I was fortunate to be able to spend a lot of time with the retiring CEO, wonderful man, Dan Liga. And we were able to partner on some things, but the credit, and I pause for emphasis, the credit is due to our Chief Operations Officer, Cheryl Smith, who is the head of our internal COVID task force. She put a lot of detail and work into the coordination of all of the different programs to make sure that we didn't miss a beat when it came to the provision, the continuity of provision of services.
Excellent. Let me quickly take a pause. Stick with me here, Selma. Folks on the air also and on our podcast, we're going to just take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk to Selma Ward. She's the newest leader of the 186-year-old Children's Center of Hamden. Lots more to talk about in the last 8 or 9 minutes that we have with Selma. We'll be back in just a moment. Do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find one that's supporting a nonprofit in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the event tab, and find out how to promote it or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Hey, the Connecticut Department of Agriculture is urging farmers and producers to apply for the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Coronavirus Food Assistance Program to provide vital financial assistance to absorb sales losses and increased marketing costs associated with the COVID-19 pandemic. As of August 17th, over 100 applications for Connecticut producers have been approved, totaling almost $7 million. USDA is accepting CFAP applications now through September 11th, so producers should apply through the Farm Service Agency at their local USDA service center. You can learn more at farmers.gov/CFAP, and to help support farmers in your community, just visit ctgrown.gov. All right. Thanks for sticking with us. And the Children's Center of Hamden, if you're interested in finding out more about this agency serving young people and adults throughout the region and central and southern Connecticut, you can go to childrenscenterhamden.org. Their newest CEO is Selma Ward. She's on the line with us now. And before we took a break, we were talking a little bit about how the team was readying their COVID kind of situation there at the campus and for their programming as Selma was coming on board at the agency. But Selma, tell me a little bit about how you applied your style and personality toward reassuring the young people who are on campus there, as well as the staff that were really probably agonizing over how to come back to work.
It's all about communication and transparency, John. It really is. And one of the things that I value is lots of transparency. Even when I don't have an answer or I'm not prepared with an answer yet, I demonstrate that for team members. Don't know exactly where this is going yet, but we're working on it. We're trying to define it. We're trying to, you know, figure out a resolution that's going to be best for everybody. It's going to take us a little time to get there. Whatever it is, I share information with my team so that they're not in the dark. And if they're not in the dark, there's a comfortable exchange of information. So they have the comfort level to come to me and ask questions, and I trust them with the information that I have. That exchange has to be there, especially during these times, because people are scared. And we want to make sure that we're providing an environment that they're comfortable in. Matter of fact, I sent out a survey earlier this week to the team members who are coming back onto campus, so those that work in our community-based programs and those that work in administration. And I said, tell me what your comfort level is. You know, 1 to 5. And are you provided with all of the personal protective equipment that you need to do your job and feel safe? So I'm waiting on all of the results to come back in. And then my senior leadership team will come together with a plan to address those that may not be as comfortable. Transparency is key.
Good. And what kind
in any leadership platform.
And what kind of best practices are you applying in terms of dealing with the young people? Because where older folks like me might be a little bit more afraid or concerned or even scared to come back into work after being away for a long time, the younger people still really, you know, by natural tendency, need and want and in many ways are healthier mentally and physically with social interaction. What's going on over at the Children's Center of Hamden in terms of laying down the law for everybody's own safety while still taking into account this sort of predisposition to need to be social?
So for our students that live on campus, they're already living together. And what we're going to do, especially if school ramps up starting next week, our residential students who are already living together, they have, quote, unquote, I'm using air quotes, almost a herd immunity, mm-hmm. are going to have their educational sessions in another building. Our clinical day students who are going to be coming onto campus will be occupying the Whitney Hall School. And because there will be now reduced census within the school, we have the appropriate space needed so that they can have mask-free time. We can ask young people to be in a mask for the 6 or 7 hours during their school day. They're young people. Mm-hmm. They want to share their mask. They want to pick their nose. They want to do other things, all of the things that kids do. So we have to create an environment that is going to make them comfortable, that are going to keep our educational teams comfortable. And by splitting up the classes in the manner in which we've decided, we will be able to do that and keep everybody safe. And on top of all of that, between the cleaning supplies, the new janitorial team that's specifically assigned to the school, we will do everything that we can to keep things safe for both our students and our employees.
Excellent. Folks, if you're tuning in, we've got a couple more minutes with Selma Ward. She is the new CEO of the Children's Center of Hamden. As you hear, applying a lot of common sense and education and experiential background to the operation at this 186-year-old human service agency here, not just serving Hamden, but folks all over the state and beyond, and I guess in a couple of narrow cases. But before we wrap up, Selma, another important thing I wanted to talk about was the fact that in your two prior jobs, you were both a CFO and a controller. So you come from a background that has a lot of involvement in the financial interactions. How will you apply your expertise on the finance end of nonprofit operations and management to enhance and get the Children's Center an even bigger bang for every operational dollar that's put in your hands?
You know, my background in finance and accounting has served me well over the past 20 years. And the way that I think it will be valuable to my role here is when we consider the state of the state's economy and the reduction of dollars, state dollars that are coming into human service nonprofits, we need to be able to best utilize each dollar that we do have to make sure we're still serving our most vulnerable in a very economic fashion. And the way that I do that is increased efficiency and streamlining.
So
those are my two focuses from a financial background. Things have got to be done with a lot of efficiency. You know, we had our retiring CEO's retirement party last week, and the COO talked about how he would come in after a weekend and they would have a meeting and he would have all of his notes in a notebook, and how when I come into a meeting, everything is put on the smart board and Excel book. So even the change from paper to electronic forms of communication is a measure of cost savings for our agency.
Well, it's great to hear how you're not only bringing this wealth of experience to bear, but also it was great before we went on the air this morning to share a few minutes with you to get a little to hear a little secret that I can promise folks listening they're going to want to tune in to hear more about the next time we have Selma Ward on the award winning For the People. For now, she is going to continue in her role transitioning to leadership as the CEO of the Children's Center of Hamden, which offers a wide range of services for children and teenagers with behavioral and mental health diagnoses, including those that come to the center for outpatient and day services. And since COVID-19, their virtual services. The agency also runs a K-12 special education school and the Casa Rios Group Home for Women and residential treatment programs for young people. A lot of work for a great team led by a new leader. And we really appreciate you having an opportunity for us to get to know you, Selma Ward. And we wish you luck and can't wait to hear more about the great things you're doing at the Children's Center of Hamden. So I'll say farewell for now, but we will be talking again soon. Thanks. Well, we are back with a familiar agency on the program this morning and a new friend at it. So pleased to make the acquaintance of Margaret Gustafson. She is an education consultant with the Office of Early Childhood and their Division of Quality Improvement. And the reason we are talking with Margaret today is because the WBDC and Fran Pastor get way too much airtime on the award-winning For the People. We talked to Fran just a few weeks ago about how the Women's Business Development Council was doing all kinds of incredible work assisting folks all over the state of Connecticut with programming to keep themselves alive and vibrant through this COVID-19 pandemic. And then here we go now, just a couple weeks after that, and with the massive challenges associated with COVID-19, coupled with the impact of increased expenses, including minimum wage and utilities, we know many childcare programs across Connecticut are struggling to remain open, provide quality education and care at an affordable price, and pay employees a livable wage. So I guess the logical combination was to take some of the incredible ideas and best practices that are trademark of WBDC and envelope them together with the Office of Early Childhood, which is led, of course, by our friend Beth Bai, who has handed the baton to Margaret Gustafson this morning. So, Margaret, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having us, John. We're always happy to talk about the work that we're doing and really excited to clearly, you know, shout out this Women's Business Development Council partnership.
Yeah, collaboration is the key, especially these days, putting the best minds and resources of agencies together for the best outcome for both or all participants seems to be working well, or at least we've been blessed to be able to encounter a lot of these collaborations and shine a light on them as we are doing with this one. But first of all, just a little bit more about yourself, because before we went on the air, you kind of ticked off this growing list of punch list of duties that you're engaged with the OEC. Tell me a little bit more about what you're doing there.
Absolutely. So I've been with the Office of Early Childhood since it first formed, July of 2013. It's one of the first folks to join into the newly created agency that took different early childhood units from across different state departments and put us all into one house to be much more effective and efficient. And when I entered in, my primary role was as the administrator of our workforce registry. And it has, you know, grown and expanded and changed much like most everyone else's jobs. I also am the project lead for our accreditation quality improvement support project, which uses national accreditation assessment items or criteria for best practices to move programs forward. And most recently, the bigger piece I'm here talking about today is being named lead on our long-term recovery work group. And we are looking at it as very long-term. We have things that are immediate, short-term, and long-term. And this is a field where we have our work cut out for us.
Well, we've been hearing the story or the chapter in this larger volume that focuses on child care and both the challenges that a lack of it pose to parents, especially single parent households, and also the greater concern about implications to the workforce as businesses open and Connecticut has continued with its phased reopening over the past month or two. We know that as August arrived, there was just under half of Connecticut's licensed childcare programs online. And they are facing a lot of challenges. For folks that aren't engaged or haven't been using or haven't used childcare in quite a long time, can you just kind of tick off a few of the biggest challenges that the centers are facing, either as they are operational now or as they look forward to opening and helping support the communities, no matter how they're planning to re-engage students in school this fall?
Absolutely. So there is a long list, and I'll try to shorten it up into a few buckets. It's important for folks to remember that childcare was not one of the industries that was ever closed during COVID-19. And obviously, businesses had to make individual decisions, and some towns did as well. But there was surely a recognition that essential healthcare providers and others needed childcare in order to go and do their very important jobs. So Office of Early Childhood has supported a lot of childcare programs to remain open during the pandemic and also to go through a process of reopening. A few of the bigger challenges, obviously, are the constant changing communication and guidance. As we learn more and more about COVID-19, we've had to respond to this public health crisis in a way that promotes safety of children, families, staff, and stakeholders first, but also has that balance or tension of supporting the workforce. So we have tried to provide as an agency a lot of communications that programs themselves can use by way of documents, web-based training, Zoom calls, all kinds of different material to help them feel more comfortable and build confidence within their staff, and then also to help the families to feel comfortable in coming back into group care. You know, one thing we've always done really well as a industry is hand washing. And the folks laugh when I say this, but, you know, childcare, there are always a lot of germs being shared amongst the children. It's a part of, you know, just the play and the active nature of children, the things that we really encourage them to get involved in. So we've always been very active hand washers. Now we just have additional layers and more, I guess, serious approaches to some of these things. We've always done health checks of children as they come in every day. When you have teachers who see these kids and their families every day, it's very easy to look and say, you know, someone seems a little bit off today. You know, let's talk about how their night was. And as you know, children naturally do get sick. They share germs and they're building up their immune system. So it's not uncommon for children to look slightly off or to have fevers. And so we needed to be able to provide a lot of communications for both the programs and the families to feel comfortable and more confident being back in group care. Obviously, a huge, huge piece of the challenge picture is funding. As programs shut down and some remained open, families stayed home. The programs were losing their revenue. And so while the Office of Early Childhood tried to maintain certain funding streams for our state-funded programs and our Care for Kids subsidy programs, we also recognized that this was going to be much longer term because the group size has been impacted by COVID-19. Obviously, if you watch any news, you hear any news show, you talk about groups getting together. And now with the colleges and college kids getting back together, we're trying to still talk about really minimalizing all of those group interactions. And so as we look at childcare programs in regulation, we have restrictions around the group sizes. And as we had to reduce those, it meant that programs reduced their revenue. That's been a huge, huge hit. And we have to remember, too, that the childcare industry has always been somewhat fragile. The cost of really high-quality childcare is something that most families cannot afford and most programs cannot charge. So we have this very unstable industry where we have a lot of staff who are underpaid. We have a lot of minority staff. So this is also, you know, a mix of the equity issues in here. And then we have families who are trying to meet this cost of care. So we have tried to turn around as much as possible to be able to address some of those funding gaps and expense gaps as well.
So is this where the CT Cares for Child Care Businesses comes in?
Absolutely. Yep. So what we did was we took the entire program budget and tried to piece it apart so that all of our partners and stakeholders could see the opportunities for places to offset expenses. The Office of Early Childhood launched CT Cares for Child Care Businesses to address as much of those things internally as we could. We have CT Cares money that we're using for two subsidies, one called the Expense Kickstart and the other the Supply Subsidy. That are for licensed providers to be able to regain some expenses, recognizing that we could never make the programs whole again, but we could give these kickstarters to be able to help programs to stay open, to be able to kind of edge them forward enough so that hopefully they can stay viable as the program size or the group size increases again over time. And then we looked at other opportunities within our agency to be able to expand programs that we have to help programs, things like paying for first aid, CPR, medication administration, and EpiPen training for certifications that have expired under the emergency declaration, things like covering background checks for new staff and those who whose terms are expiring. So every possible opportunity to be able to nibble away at the expenses is what we're aiming for. And it's the same thing that we're moving forward with other partners and looking at what comes after CT Cares for Child Care Businesses.
So as CCCCB was coming together at the same time in another part of the galaxy, the Women's Business Development Council was also launching a child care unit.
Yep, so we started talking to them early. You know, it's amazing the way that the universe aligns, right? Because somehow along the way, we got connected. And one of the things that we immediately latched into at OEC was how well we fit with WBDC. So their community relationships, how well they empower clients, right? It's not just a checkoff box. Mm-hmm. It's really a piece of building a relationship for caseload management over time, very positive track record, and just their ability to really convey business information in a simple and coherent way, right? Because we know childcare really well at the Office of Early Childhood. We're great on child development. We have very smart, capable people who work in our agency, but we are not business experts. And as we started riding through this pandemic, we realized that we really needed the business expertise of WBDC to come in. We need to have programs that are businesses of excellence, not just childcare of excellence. And we have a lot of places where we have spent time and effort to put out training around different, you know, parts of the business, how to make a budget, why it's important, setting up a bank account, you know, lots of different things. But we really needed WBDC's help their expertise to be able to, first off, triage our programs that are, you know, very fragile and are thinking about closing, help us to figure out how we can best help those programs. But then also looking at things on a much more holistic level. As they do their business health assessments, they'll be helping us set up benchmarks that programs can move through to be able to access other incentives, financial incentives, and technology incentives, because we know that good businesses also need business tools.
Sure.
You know, they need internet access and they need working technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a field that is aging, and our computers and programs often are also pretty aged. It doesn't take much in technology to become aged. So they're going to help us to really piece out what are the different benchmarks that programs need to meet
mm-hmm.
in order to move along and be more stable, much more viable, and then open up to be ready for additional funding opportunities.
Yeah, that's great. And if they're, lead folks at WBDC are good for anything amongst the many things that they do. They're really good at assisting businesses and organizations that they partner with in getting funding. So it's great to hear that WBDC and their new child care unit is kind of, for lack of a better term, going to be almost kind of, case managing and mentoring the business side and everything beyond the actual hands-on child care for a lot of these agencies that you're coordinating through the Office of Early Childhood, which is a fantastic plan. How does this, in the last minute or two that we have with you, Margaret, how does this roll forward, and when do you expect to start seeing the benefits of this partnership?
Well, I'm really happy to say that we're actually already seeing the benefits. We've been so fortunate that WBDC has been able to ramp up immediately. As you said, they already have a child care unit. They have a web page already live. We have access information that we've pushed out to our providers. And we're really focusing on making sure that information gets where it needs to in a variety of ways. So our partner 211 Child Care will have information that they can use as they're talking with child care programs to be able to route them back to WBDC. We're also using our staffed family child care networks and our accreditation quality improvement support initiatives to be able to start having conversations about what are the needs, how do we triage folks, but then also build those longer term supports. And one of the places that we've seen immediate results is around the PPP program because WBDC has had such an excellent relationship, obviously, with SBA. So as that program was extended, WBDC was able to use some child care providers who had successfully moved through the first round to promote the second round. And that drummed up, of course, more interest and allowed us to be able to have great examples of how the partnership works and how the PPP had worked. So we're seeing things immediately, and we know that, you know, this is a 2-year contract to begin. We expect that we're going to be focused on business health for a very, very long time.
Excellent.
So I'm sure that we're going to have a lot more to talk about over time.
Very good. Well, it's great to hear that the Connecticut Office of Early Childhood is formally addressing business support as part of its COVID-19 program, CT Cares for Child Care Businesses, also referred to as CARE Package, identifying the layers of program and support for immediate, short-term, and long-term opportunities to stabilize and grow capacity through Connecticut's child care systems in partnership with the Women's Business Development Council, WBDC, our longtime friends here at the award-winning For the People that are going to be helping ensure child care businesses have free access to business experts and individualized support, like we heard about from our guest this morning, Margaret Gustafson, an education consultant and director of quality improvement with the Office of Early Child Care. So lots more to talk about, Margaret, and we look forward to hearing more about about this partnership and the great results, and hopefully the ways it's going to not only grow and sustain, but help more childcare businesses open to serve the growing workforce that's going back to work in this COVID-19 world. In the meantime, thanks so much for being part of the show this morning, and we wish you luck with it, and we'll talk again soon. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.